Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today on this Friday of a very, very busy weekend in Dublin. I'm going to go straight away to Teresa Cassidy. Teresa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Teresa, you drive, or the proud owner of, a Nissan Leaf electric vehicle.
Yes.
And I'd say Nissan Leaf, probably one of the most popular EVs on the road.
Yes, probably. There's lots of them, yes.
And you've been pretty happy with your one?
Absolutely, up until January of this year.
How long have you had it, Teresa?
It's a 2018 car.
Right. And how much is on the clock there?
31,000 kilometres.
Okay, so you're not exactly a heavy user.
No. It's just all mainly local driving.
Okay, so tell us what went wrong then.
Well, in January of this year, we noticed when the battery dropped to 50%, when we'd be out driving, and particularly if we were going uphill, the battery used to drop down anything from 20 to 30%. It could do that in a 1 kilometre. Drive, you know, from here up to the top of the hill. We live at the bottom of the hill, actually. And it persisted. And, you know, we started keeping a record of what was happening. And at one point, on a 15-kilometre journey, the car clocked 54 kilometres.
Right.
And it was only, and that was a round trip now, 15 kilometres. And, like, there was loads of incidents like that. Anyway, we got onto our garage, which it had been serviced every year, got onto our garage and booked it in for a checkup. And that was in March. And they told us there was nothing wrong. So we came home and we were very unhappy, really, because we kind of figured there was something wrong. So we continued to keep a record. And then we were getting nowhere with the garage. So I got onto Nissan Ireland. And after a lot of emails to-ing and fro-ing, the Nissan Ireland asked us to get the garage to do this cell voltage loss inspection, which they did. I think it was the 4th of June they did that.
This is an inspection of the battery and battery capacity.
The large battery, yeah. So when they did that, anyway, they found cell 73 was faulty and they couldn't do anything about it there. So they asked us to bring it out to a garage out in the north side, mm-hmm. because they have the equipment and whatever out there. And they told us that there would be an estimated cost. I asked how much it would cost, and they said between 3,000 and 4,000 euro.
Nice.
So, and just to look at the battery,
and this
just
is just
to look at it,
was
going to cost us 620 plus VAT.
Right. And this is, again, so that's the, that was the estimated quote before they ever looked at it, and it was
just because
you were told there was a problem with one cell. And just to tell people, because I didn't know this until today, there are 192 cells in an EV battery, 48 modules, and four cells in each, and you end up with 100. So one cell, number 73, was your problem.
Yeah, that's what they said. Yeah.
Okay, but you're lucky, because of course you're thinking our car is still under warranty.
That's right. Yes, we thought, at least we understood, there was an 8-year warranty on the battery. And both the garage and Nissan Ireland told us that the warranty, the 8-year warranty, is only for the battery capacity. The battery capacity has to be at 12 bars. And in order for the 8-year warranty to come into effect, it has to be below 9 bars.
Okay.
And when our car was tested, it was at 12 bars.
Okay. I'll just stop you there because it's getting a bit complicated. We'll just go back to the fact that you have a problem with your battery. You're told you have a problem with a cell in your battery, and you are looking at your warranty, which, and I have it, I have the Nissan New Leaf warranty from Nissan.ie yeah. here. And it says there, the Nissan Leaf offers you, and they're talking about the various things, and then the last line is, an 8-year, 160,000-kilometre warranty on the battery. So for yeah. sure, there's no question about that. The battery, according to this warranty, is guaranteed for 8 years or 160,000 kilometres. Now, you are well below that. You're only, what you say, 31,000 kilometres.
31,000, yeah.
Okay, so, and again, reading that, I would think you're grand. And I yes. think a lot of people wouldn't. Let's have a little listen to Mary Donnelly from the Climate Action Council, because this actual question came up on Morning Ireland this week. She was speaking on Thursday morning, and it was put to her that a lot of people might be slow or, you know, be cautious about taking on an EV car because there's concerns about, you know, whether the battery will last or issues with car batteries. And this is what she said.
Firstly, on the batteries, SEAI has done an analysis of the batteries, and the batteries that are being made available in cars and EVs today in Ireland are guaranteed for 160,000 kilometres. That's on average 11 and a half years of transport in the Irish context. So battery longevity is being covered by the provisions of the regulations of putting these products on the market. So it's not, it has been a scare thing, but I don't think it really needs to be in going forward into the future.
Okay, so that was Mary Donnelly, who is head of the Climate Action Council. That was her understanding of the guarantee that's out there for batteries. And indeed, obviously, your understanding. And indeed, when looking at the warranty online, that would have been my understanding. But there is yes. one line in that warranty, which is at the very end, which is said, you should read the warranty information booklet supplied with your Nissan and be familiar with its contents. Because when you go right down into the finest of fine print, there is this explanation of how far that warranty goes, or the limits of that warranty on the battery, isn't there? So yeah. you were explaining that there. So it's actually about whether or not, when you fully charge your battery, whether it goes up to the full 12 bars or if it doesn't go beyond 9 bars, then they'll then they'll accept there's a problem with the battery.
Yes, that's right. Yes. But sorry, Kate, just to say, I don't know if they ever checked the battery capacity at, you know, when the battery was at 50%. Whether that would be different or not, I don't know.
Anyway,
it was only at 50% or below that the problem arose.
Well, look, we contacted them anyway. And we put to them your situation. Because they're telling you that the warranty doesn't cover it. But they will, they said, as a goodwill gesture, cover, did they say 25% of it, a quarter of the cost?
25% off the parts
yeah,
only.
But you now have the full bill. So tell us what the full bill for that will be.
The total bill now is €5,807.88. And that includes the 25% goodwill gesture from Nissan Ireland.
So that's only 75% of the actual cost of fixing one cell of that battery.
Yes.
Wow. So again, give me the figure, 5,000?
€5,807.88.
Right. Oh, my God. Let me talk to... okay. Well, I want to say what Nissan said to us when we went to ask them about this. And they said, the issue, this is their response, the issue with this customer's vehicle is not relating to battery degradation. The issue is relating to an EV, an electric vehicle component in the vehicle, which is outside of warranty. So we asked them then, is the component we're talking about a cell in one of the modules, i.e. one of the modules in the battery? And yes. they replied, yes, that is correct.
Okay.
So the component in the vehicle that is outside of warranty is a cell in the battery. And that,
okay.
they say, is not relating to battery degradation. Can I bring in, somebody who knows a lot more about this than I do. You probably know more than most people in the country at this stage,
well,
Teresa.
I know a lot in the last 3 months, Katie.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I want to bring in Fergal McGrath. Fergal, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Katie.
Now, I know you were on talking to Joe before about engine efficiency. I know you're actually the holder of a Guinness a number of Guinness World Records, I think, for creating efficient engines. What do you make of this? I mean, in terms of the, like that response from Nissan saying that it's not about a degradation, it's not about battery degradation. It's about a component which is outside of warranty, but that component happens to be in the battery.
Well, I think I'm exactly the same as the owner lady herself and yourself, and probably 99% of the people in the country, that this small print never gets found out until cases like this. And most people, when they buy an EV and the warranty says 8 years or 160,000 kilometres, that's what they expect to get. And if one cell in a battery module was to fail and cost more than the car is worth to repair, well, if that's within that warranty period, the OEM should fix that car. Simple as that. So I think there's a dangerous position here for OEMs in this regard, because PPI and
OEMs,
mis-selling an original manufacturer, so a Nissan or an original car manufacturer.
Sorry, Fergal, just to be absolutely open about it, you do work for another car company, not Nissan as we're doing here, but I mean that you're saying this as somebody with an expertise.
I've worked for three decades in the industry, and to be honest, you wouldn't expect that what this lady is going through. You just don't expect that, because that repair cost is now probably close to what the car is worth, and it could effectively make the car scrap. So that's not fair, and they shouldn't treat her like that. They should correct it so that's open and transparent for that warranty, not hide the small detail away in the where nobody's going to find it.
And I know that when we contacted you and just said what Teresa was experiencing in terms of how the car was driving, you immediately said, that sounds like a cell problem. That sounds like a problem with one or more of the cells. So is it something you've come across before?
Yeah, it's not uncommon, because like you said, there's a multitude of cells in these battery packs, and all it takes is one of them to go down, one of them to have a problem, and then the battery won't perform, the whole system won't perform as it should. And to get access to that cell is an absolute nightmare of a job. And in some car makers' case, like Tesla, you can't even get to that cell because they seal it with a kind of a epoxy glue, so you can't even take out the cell. The whole battery has to be replaced. So this is, I think, a bigger thing waiting to unfold as more and more EVs come out to the market. And in the case of an engine, for example, if the starter or the alternator was to go, you can replace those parts and it doesn't cost too much. But in the battery, if a cell goes, the car is scrap.
God, that's it's scrap or it's, I suppose, depending on the age of the car and the type of car it
is. Exactly,
If it's 5,700, it's only 75% of the cost of getting this Nissan Leaf sorted with one cell. And it's actually, as you say, getting access to the battery is probably a lot of the cost there.
Oh, it's a huge effort to get access to. First of all, you have to take the battery out of the car. Then you have to open up the pack itself. You have to get access to all the modules, then take out the faulty module, then access the cell within that module, correct it, then put it all back together again. So it's tricky work.
But then you have, like, you have Mary Donnelly there on Morning Ireland reassuring people and saying, look, if people should understand that they have this warranty and it's good for 160,000 kilometres or 8 years.
The key point there is I'm shocked at that in the case of Nissan. And it's not to say every OEM has that small print. So it really would need to be an investigation into which OEMs are doing what Nissan's doing, because that's totally, I would call it, like, just not, it's hiding away the truth from people, you know?
They will say that it's in their terms and conditions. It's just, as I say, it's not immediately apparent when you look at the warranty. The headlines on the warranty is
It definitely
says here
in
black and white. Yeah, 8 years, 160,000 kilometres. And nobody, there's no kind of asterisk saying except for when it is one cell of a battery that goes down when you look at their website.
I'd be interested to research into Tesla now, because they're obviously the leading seller around Europe and the world of EVs. I must look that up now as a personal interest.
Well, it strikes me, though, that Teresa can't be the only person that this has happened to. If this is something that you're aware of that can happen to batteries, obviously it has happened to other batteries, and it has happened to them when they're within the warranty, as people understood the warranty they had. So I'm wondering how other cases have been dealt with. And as you say, maybe it's just we're at a point now where there's a critical mass of EVs out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And we might be hearing more about this from here on in. But Teresa, so where are you at this point, Teresa? Where do you stand?
Where do I stand? Well, I'm standing or sitting talking to you now, and you were my last resort, really, because I've been fighting this by email and phone calls since March. And, when I got this bill the other day on the 26th, which is a couple of days ago, I thought, oh, my God, what do I do now? Because my husband and I are pensioners, and we worked all our lives and paid our taxes and whatever else. And I just felt this is really like having a go at us. And, the other thing that I would say is in the beginning, when we made the complaint about it, we were told it was our driving style.
Right. Now, that has nothing to do with Nissan, obviously. I'd say you're not the only person who's been told before. Women in particular, I think, get told that their driving style is the problem with all sorts of things in cars.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid they spoke to the wrong lady when they spoke to me.
But
I don't know what to do now. I mean, my husband and I will discuss this now after I've been speaking to you. And maybe I'll get on to Nissan Ireland again and see if they can do anything for us, or will they do anything for us. And, 25% on parts only as a goodwill gesture is not good enough for me.
No, absolutely not.
I'm very tempted just to take the car back, because our range now at the moment is about 120 kilometres before we have to charge it again, because we're afraid that it will just die on us. So we charge it when it gets down to about 50%, we charge it again. I mean, and that's the whole idea of an electric car was to bring down emissions and not to be using fuel and all of that. And we were very happy with it, and very happy the way things were going and all of that, until this happened. And now I really have a sour taste in my mouth about electric cars, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Look, Teresa, the very best to look with that. Stay in touch with us. Let us know how you get on.
I will, absolutely, Katie. Thank you for that.
I'm really interested in seeing where this ends up, because I think there may be more than yourselves in this position as well. And Fergal, before I let you go, just have you tips for people in terms of minding their batteries and getting the best out of their batteries for EVs?
If you can, charge it at home, because trickle charging will prolong the life of the battery. If you constantly fast charge it, what you get when you're out in the public road, you're putting a lot more heat into the battery, and that will degrade the cells quicker. So a lot of people who have a driveway, they tend to charge at home. It's much more convenient.
I was just going to say that some people don't have that option, do they?
No, well then, unfortunately, your battery will degrade quicker, but still it will be inside that 8-year degradation criteria, because OEMs design, car makers design batteries to be well within that tolerance. So this lady's incident is quite, it's based on a cell. It's not based on the overall battery degradation.
Yeah. And so the batteries should make it well past the 8-year mark, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, even if you fast charge it. But, I mean, if you want to prolong it, because most people think a car should last 15 years at least. So my advice would be don't fast charge it continuously, because then you'll start to get, once you get past the 8 years, then you'll start to see a significant decline in the range.
Okay, good tip. Fergal, many thanks for that. I really appreciate that. And Teresa, best of luck. And we will take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, now we're going to move on to something completely different. Idel, good afternoon.
Hello, hi, Katie.
Idel, You've just been through a very distressing situation. Your son is it 19?
19, yeah, that's right.
And he has been in hospital recently.
Yeah, so he was admitted to hospital. He had an ongoing illness and it got worse and he was admitted to hospital and admitted to a ward with two other men. And one of the men in the ward was obvious that he had problems, you know, and he was, I would think, what they refer to as a special patient in that he had somebody looking there with him all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. He was obviously very agitated. He was shouting all the time. The language was colourful. Day and night this went on, and shouting at staff and everything. But, you know, obviously that you know he had issues. Mm-hmm. So anyway, my main concern was the constant noise. My son wasn't getting any sleep, and I did mention it, and he mentioned it himself. But I suppose they were saying, like, the pressure on beds, you know, is significant in hospitals, and there's nothing we can do. So we kind of left it at that. So about a week and a half into his hospital stay, or slightly less, I happened to be in the hospital, and he was attached to a feeding tube that dislodged. My son was attached to a feeding tube that dislodged in the night and was taken out. And we took that opportunity to go for a walk around the hospital. We came back. He was sitting on the bed. I went out. I got a call from my aunt. I went out. This was in the afternoon, about 3:15 in the afternoon. I went out, spoke to my aunt on the phone, was chatting away to her, and then I heard this commotion, was wondering what the hell was going on, turned around, didn't for a minute realise until I walked towards the ward that my son was in, that my son was after being attacked. So what had happened,
I was just going to say, yeah, when you say attacked, like what could you see at that point, or what had happened?
Well, I walked in, the guy, that man that I refer to, was lying on the ground. But what actually happened was my son was sitting on the bed and I was out in the phone. He was luckily sitting on the bed. He wasn't asleep. He wasn't in bed. He wasn't attached to that apparatus, mm-hmm. with the feeding tube and that. So he was sitting, he looked up, and this man had, this man was not very mobile. He had a walker, mm-hmm. and he had the walker raised above his head and was about to bring it down on top of my son. And he jumped up, and he had to fight him off. The guy hit him on the ribs with the walker, and he had to fight him off. And luckily, he's done a bit of martial arts, and he was able to kick him away and defend himself. I walked in just as he was on the ground. You just can't quite believe what's after happening. According to my son, his side of it is that the person that had been with him all along wasn't in the vicinity at this moment. Oh. Whether if she would have been able to do anything or not, I don't know. But I suppose, luckily, the conditions were right that he was able to get up, he was able to defend himself. But had he been lying in the bed, had he been connected to that apparatus that he'd been connected to all along, he would not have been able to, he would not have been mobile, or if he just wasn't aware or didn't see him coming. Mm-hmm. If it had been an elderly patient there, or somebody very sick that couldn't get up and defend themselves. So I suppose my first instinct was to try and, a few people came into the room then, obviously, because people heard the commotion. And my first instinct was to say, he needs to be moved out of here now, you know. Mm-hmm. And
was he was he okay, Adele?
Well, he was just, you know, it's the fight or flight. He said himself he didn't know how he was going to, how he would react to that situation, because even though he hadn't done martial arts that long, but it was kind of in recent times, but he didn't know whether he'd be able to put it into action if he was attacked. But he was in that fight mode where it took him a while to come down. You know, he mm-hmm. was very shaken and dizzy after it, you know. Okay.
And obviously, he's in hospital, so he's not in the whole of his health to begin with. So,
well, exactly. Yeah. You kind of expect to be, you'd hope that you're going to be somewhat safe, you know, in that setting. Especially when you're trying to recover, it's not good. And so anyway, I asked for him to be moved immediately out of the room, and to my surprise, it took me like hours of negotiation to get him moved. And what was said to me was that there's a pressure on beds, we don't have the room. He's a patient too, which is true, he is a patient too. He's mentally incapable and incapacitated. They were the words that were used. He didn't know what he was doing. And I suggest all of that is true. And, you know, this is not his fault, if that's the case. But he should not be in a room with other patients. He said that he'd been in hospital. This hadn't happened before. And I said, okay, but you must have known he would have been unpredictable, because you're saying he didn't really know. He doesn't have the faculties to know what he's doing. So therefore, it would have been better to put him somewhere where he's not. To be honest with you, it's putting him in a compromising position as well as other patients. It could have been a lot more serious had conditions been different, or whatever. And I don't think it was a particular attack on my son. I can't be sure, obviously, but I think it was whoever was there in the bed at the time.
Your son, just to be clear, your son hadn't had any interaction with him ahead of this, had he, as far as you know?
The only interaction that he'd had, I think, on one particular night, he asked him to be quiet, but he wouldn't have realised. Like, there was constant shouting and he couldn't sleep. And I think at one stage he said, could you ever be quiet, or something like that. So that could have maybe drawn him on. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
But as you say, he's not well. He wasn't well anyway, this man, and this was acknowledged.
No.
And your issue is that a patient with these issues should not be put into a ward with other vulnerable patients.
Well, that's the main point. And the other point is, if anything does happen, then there needs to be an appropriate response, because it was downplayed all the way along the line. I think had they come and tried to just go, oh God, and go into mode and get him moved and whatever, did whatever. I just felt like I was almost been made to feel like I was the unreasonable one asking for this. And it wasn't just me. My son then wanted to be, he didn't even, the room that he was moved to, the man that was in that bed, there are those trolley beds where you can just wheel the bed out, and then was two rooms away. And the man that was in that bed that my son was moved in beside this person that had just attacked my son, which to me beggars belief, you know.
And did that patient know why he was being moved?
I have no idea, because this was all going on. I did not speak to that patient. I don't know. I don't know what he knew or didn't know.
Well, there's obviously privacy issues there as well that have to
be. Yeah, there would be. Yeah.
Did anybody apologise to your son?
So I sent an email the next day to the patient services, and I got a call, and he got a visit from somebody from the hospital to say, sorry, from the hospital that had happened. Now, when I was talking to that person on the phone, and, you know, she did apologise on behalf of the hospital, but I have to say, people who were looking after him, it took 2 days before I even mentioned it. It was like it never happened. But I asked her about what is the policy with regard to the supervision of patients, because the integration, I suppose, of patients, in terms of like if they're potentially putting other patients at risk, and maybe staff at risk as well, who knows. And she said that the policy of the hospital was to integrate, not to segregate, and et cetera, et cetera. So it was an apology on behalf of which, yeah, but it was also, this is what we do. And that's what I felt she was saying, you know. And
so the suggestion wasn't that this patient was with other patients because there was pressure on beds, but that it was an actual policy of integrating patients with these issues.
Yes, yes. Now, she did say this shouldn't have happened, you know, and all that. But I asked for a copy of their policy. I haven't received it yet, and I my son, who's an adult, so it would be him they'd be sending to, not me, has asked for it as well. We haven't received it as yet, you know, but maybe we'll get it soon.
And how is he now, Idal?
He's out of hospital. He's all right, but I do think, you know, he's been quite ill, ongoing ill for a while. I think for a 19-year-old to go through that, is not, for anybody to go through that is not great, but for a 19-year-old, and he's had, you know, there's been stuff in the past, and it probably would maybe emphasise any feelings he has about the world not being a safe place, you know what I mean, when something like that happens in hospital. However, he was able, luckily he saw him, and he was able to defend himself, which is, you know, thank God, you know.
Absolutely, exactly. I mean, yeah, there's nothing, I mean, just being randomly attacked like that is... It's a shock for anyone. You know, it's not something anybody should have to deal with, and certainly not when you're in your pyjamas in a hospital bed. That's for sure.
No, no.
Adele, we'll see if we get anything else in on that. It is surprising to say the least that is the integration that integration policy that you were told about.
I would have thought that too, but I've just been talking, you know, obviously telling people about it, et cetera, and the number of stories now, not about attacks as such, but about that, you know, patients that could be potentially, you know, could potentially put other patients at risk being integrated. And I think it goes on, you know, across the board in various hospitals, seems to be, you know.
The way things are done,
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, look. We'll see what else we hear about that. But we wish your son the very, very best, Adele.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for that. Take care. Bye bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about it all day since last night. That debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden last night was really something else, and I think has sent shockwaves around the world. Let's have and shockwaves, it should be said, among the Democratic Party in particular. Let's hear MSNBC's Joy Reid. She was talking about the text she was receiving while Trump and Biden were still on air having that debate.
Joe Biden's job was to reassure them tonight. His job was to calm his party, to make them feel that, yes, I can do this. I have four more years in me. I have the ability and the stamina and the strength to do four more years. He did not do that. He did the opposite of that.
Yeah, that's what the texts were telling Joy Reid last night as that debate was rolling on. David Fitzgerald, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Good morning.
You're in New York. I was going to say, I should say good morning to you. You're in New York.
Yes, I am. Yep.
You've been living over there since the 80s?
Since the 80s. I've been here for a long time, yes.
And what way would you vote, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, that's a difficult question. What way would we vote? Well, if you're talking about after watching the debate last night and the choice is mine between either of those candidates, I would have to select other on the ballot. You know, I would say our family for the last 4 years would be a Biden-supporting family, but unfortunately he gave a very disappointing performance last night,
Yeah, I'm going to stop you there. You said for the last 4 years would be Biden. Did you vote? Would your family have voted Trump in 2016?
Our family gave Trump a chance in the first time round in 2016.
Right.
And in 2020, elected not to do that.
And
not to give him a second chance.
Okay, why?
Why? Well, we watched him on TV, of course, and for the entertainment value more than anything else, and having roots from the other side of the Atlantic, I used to just imagine what people who live in Europe thought of the way he presented himself. And this is a man representing the United States of America. We had 4 years of, you know, evil talk, nonsense from him, and he proved himself to be not qualified to do the job. And, you know, as each day went on, he got worse and worse and worse. And he's still getting worse, if you ask me, still.
Okay, so you watched the debate last night.
I did.
What were you thinking?
I did. Well, I was actually invited to a debate watching party with friends of mine who are all Trumpers, all Trumpers. And it was outdoors, and we sat down and we're anticipating. I was anticipating that Joe Biden wouldn't come out and do us proud. But unfortunately, within the first 30 seconds of Joe Biden walking out, I knew it was going to be a problem. He looked terrible. He sounded terrible. He presented terribly, and almost he looked like a very old man who was barely capable of managing to get through his 90 minutes. And I said, this is not going to be good.
I mean, I think people were surprised at, as you say, how he presented from the very off, because he did put up a great show at the State of the Union, right?
He did. He made a very powerful speech at the State of the Union. So powerful, in fact, that the Republicans here were surprised, and they were taken by surprise at how strong his presence was. And they were worried that he would do the same during the debate. But it was completely opposite, completely opposite. And then you had the other louser, as I call him, spewing the same things that he spews day after day, you know, on his social media here in the U.S., on any television or radio station, says the same things over and over again. And he was tracked, I think, from what I saw, 32 or 34 of the facts that he specified were lies, as usual. You know, so it was, and Joe Biden wasn't strong enough to combat what Donald was saying. He was slow responding.
Whatever about Biden's inability, I mean, the people you were sitting with as the Trumpers that you were at that party with, did they, yeah. Was there an acknowledgement or any sense that they didn't buy some of those lies that you talked about there?
No, that's the amazing thing about the Donald Trump phenomenon over here. They believe everything he says, even when science and chemistry and common sense will tell you that man is clearly lying. They'll say, nope, Trump said it, it must be true. And my friends, some of whom claim to be intelligent, believe everything he says. They just believe everything that he says.
Do they believe, really, though? But David, do they believe, or is there just a sense of, you know, they'll roll along with it anyway? I mean, maybe, you know, surely at some level there is a cynicism in all of this.
No, they believe it. They believe it. I mean, some of them believe that Barack Obama is still running the country, you know, and you know, Joe Biden is a puppet. I've seen interviews with these people on a daily basis. Other people, Trumpers, believe that John F. Kennedy is still alive. They're like, unbelievable. I can't believe that people buy what he's selling. I mean, obviously, he's doing a great job selling it because half of the country is buying it.
Do you, I mean... It wouldn't be the first time if Biden. I mean, there is another debate, I think, in September, isn't there? It's the next debate.
There is, yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be the first time that a presidential candidate flounders in the first outing and, you know, can make a comeback. But do you think that Biden is just past it? Is that kind of becoming the accepted fact now?
This is 67% of Democrats, people who would normally vote for Joe Biden, after the debate yesterday, said that Joe Biden appeared not to have the goods to deliver the next 4 years. I'm sure it certainly has to do with his advancing age. You know, there's only really three or four years difference between him and Donald Trump. But the cognitive ability of both of them, when you compare them, I mean, Biden would look severely lacking. He definitely looked old yesterday. He really looked old, and it gave you an insight into what will he be like next year or 2 years from now, you know, when there's been considerable degradation between his Republican National Convention, his
State of the Union
speech and his debate last night.
Then the next question obviously is, should there be an upper age limit?
I don't know that would ever be legal in the United States. One thing about the United States, and I can say this with confidence when it's compared to Ireland, ageism is I'm sure it's not prevalent. I mean, I'm sure there's hidden ageism. This country is very good at saying You're never too old to apply for it. It's illegal to discriminate based on age ever, and it's, no matter what your position. I don't know if it will ever be legal to make an age cutoff, but, I mean, the voters certainly will decide whether Joe Biden is capable. And right now, I would say, personally, that he doesn't look like he is. You know, he's going to have another debate in September. If it's any worse, or the same people who would normally have voted for him will try to look for another candidate, I think.
Okay, David, will you stay with me? I want to bring in Kevin. Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, Kevin. Were you...
You sound beautiful, actually.
Were you tuned in to the debate?
No, not really. I've got a lot of talk about it out here in my job, and the badness of poor chap Biden, which is an awful thing to say about a president, you know?
Yeah.
When I hear it all, I think we're a very lucky people in Ireland that we don't have a thing like that going on, particularly with the two of them. And I believe they discussed golf more than anything else, and that they were worried about how far they could hit the ball.
Now, you say you were at work today, Kevin.
I'm in work in the home store and more. Actually, I'm on my break at present.
Do you mind me asking you what age you are, Kevin?
I'm 83.
So you are older than both those men that were on the stage last night.
Absolutely. And I don't mind saying I'd probably do a better job.
Like when you hear people saying there should be a cut-off point,
Let's put it this way. If Biden's family don't recognise that he's a little bit doolally, if it was me, I know my family would have me halfway to a home to get a little bit of attention and be looked after so that I couldn't make too many mistakes in public.
And how long have you been working there in home store and more for long?
Yeah, about 7 to 8 years. I've worked in Marks and Spencer before that. And before that, I worked as an electrician in Beaumont Hospital.
Have you any plans to retire?
After I retired, I decided not to stop.
I was going to say, but have you any plans to retire now at 83?
No, not till I drop. I'm not joking. I love it so much, and the people are just gorgeous. I get great reception. I get great satisfaction from the smiles I get, you know. It does a lot of good. You can actually see it happening as they walk in and you approach them and you say something and it breaks their thought. They might be having, so what will I get in here today? And when I come up with something funny, it breaks and they say, oh, that's brilliant. Thank you very much. And so they buy more stuff, obviously. I shouldn't have said that.
I'm wondering, is that an actual policy in Home Store and More? Because I was in Home Store and More a couple of weeks ago, and I think every single person working in the shop that passed me smiled at me and said hello.
Yes. Well, which one were you in?
I was in the new one in Black Rock.
Oh, yeah, I know it. Yeah. The Italian name.
The Frascati Centre, yeah, in Black Rock. But I was actually struck, and I mentioned it to somebody afterwards, that it is an incredibly friendly shop. So is that...
It's actually a definite and wonderful experience to see all the smiling faces. And as I say, it starts at the door because I'm on the door. But at the same token, we all have to say, we must say hello. We have to say, can I do anything for you? And if you want to do a message, if a person asks you something that you don't know yourself, you get someone else and you never feel embarrassed. Just the, I don't know, I'll ask someone for you.
Yeah.
That type of thing. And then you'll get good results.
Going back to the debate and what brought us into this, Kevin, when somebody like yourself, at your age, working away and being the face of that store in Swords, when you hear people talking about the need for an upper age limit and people talking about, you know, Biden and, you know, that he shouldn't be allowed to even be in the race, does it bother you?
Well, I'll tell you, it doesn't, because, I mean, the human human race is so varied with regard to the brain, as far as I can see. We're all different, so it's very hard to generalize on it, you know.
Yeah.
So you'd have to see, as I said about if I was ill, I'd be in hospital.
Yeah. So you wouldn't vote for Biden, would you? With what you saw?
I don't know now. I the American guy said I go other.
You go other.
And I do the same in England.
Right. Kevin, great to talk to you, and fair play to you.
Thank you.
That is, it's great to hear somebody with that much enthusiasm for life and for work out there. Okay, I'm going to bring in Jim now. Jim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
What do you make of this? Do you think there is a point at which we need to start saying you just can't? I mean, you have to be 35 before, you could be age 35 before you can become a president, either in Ireland or in America, I think, actually. But there is no ceiling to what age you can be to become president.
Well, personally, I'm of the opinion that there should be no limits. Everything depends on the ability of the person to do the job. And I think the sad thing about the debate last night, and like that, I had been out dancing last night, had been in bed, so I didn't listen to them. But I looked at the clips today, and the sad thing about it is that of a country with 360 million people, that these are the only two people that they feel are capable of running the country.
Yeah.
I think that's terribly sad, because you, on the one hand, you have Trump, and the fact-checking has shown that 90% of what he said was incorrect and a lie, and a blatant lie. And then poor, unfortunate Joe Biden, with due respect to the man, he heads a team, and every president heads a team that actually run the country. I think the Democratic Party, I believe, were probably sensible in asking that they have this debate early. It's possibly a measure to see whether he's fit for the job. And I think after last night, I think everybody would agree that the man may well be past it. They have an opportunity now, because whilst he is the token at the moment candidate, they haven't actually made the formal selection. And this gives them an opportunity now to regroup and rethink and decide whether he is the man for the job or not.
Yeah.
And regrettably, I think, in fairness to the man, he has done a relatively hard job, relatively well. The stock exchange in America is at its highest. The number of people, number of jobs available are greater than the number of people available to do it. They have issues in relation to the border. But on balance, I think the man showed last night that he is not as lucid as he may well have been in the past.
I believe you threw your hat in the ring in the last local elections yourself, Jim, did you?
I did, yeah. It was something to do, was, you could say, a vanity project that my family and I discussed it. The night we'd been out for dinner, and the night before the closing date for entry into the election, and we signed up at about 10 minutes to 12 on the day, which meant we didn't have a team, we didn't have printing or anything like that. But we got it out. We got out with effectively maybe 10 days. There were 9,110 dwellings within the area, the Sligo Strand Hill area. We only got to, I think it was 827 houses. And we paid the penalty. Most of those candidates were canvassing for 3 months.
Will you tell people what age you are, Jim?
Oh, yeah, I do it with pride. I walked, on average, around 8,000 steps every day, every evening, canvassing. And it didn't come up on many doors, but it came up on a few.
And what age are you, Jim?
I'm 88 years of age.
Right.
I think our local radio station, Ocean FM, did a survey around the country, and they said that I was the oldest male candidate. But there was a lady, I think, down the south in Tipperary, who may have been older than I was.
Right.
So according to them, I was the oldest candidate. I enjoyed the exercise. I enjoyed meeting the people on the door. Quite a number of people asked me what approach I would take to doing different things like housing and things. The one thing I will say is that, in fairness to county councillors around the country, irrespective of what party they represent or whether they're independent, the 2014 Act neutered county councils. Essentially, they have about 10% of their budgets that's discretionary spend. And that is just not good enough. In countries like Sweden, up to 90% of the budget is spent on councillors.
Okay.
You know, so
yeah, Jim, that is a whole other, that's a whole, the neutering of local democracy and local government is another whole day's work, which we will have to get back to again. But you enjoyed the experience anyway at 88, and the sure compared to yourself, Biden and Trump are garçons.
Well, look, I suppose I try to keep myself mentally fit and physically fit. I dance five, sometimes six nights a week.
What kind of dancing, Jim?
Social dancing. But I have done, since my wife died just over 6 years ago, I've gone to, I think it's five ballroom competitions, and I've won 11 prizes. Never actually won, I won one event. Yeah. And all the others were seconds and thirds. I don't have a set partner. If I feel like going somewhere to a big competition, it's nice to dress up now and again and challenge yourself to see, are you still up to it? And to get somewhere where somebody else recognises you're still reasonably good. I think it's great. It's great for the morale. It keeps you focused.
I was going to say, Jim, though, do you think there is ageism in Ireland? Have you ever come up against it?
Well, I suppose I've been invited in. I'm 34 years retired, and I would say I'm one of those lucky people. I've been invited by numerous organisations to come in and head them up. And I only finished up as chairman of our local basketball club last May, 12 months. I served a 3-year thing. They'd invited me in. They knew I was well in my 80s. I'd been world president in my late 70s of a big organisation. It's very much in the mind as far as I'm concerned. I don't look on myself as an 88-year-old. I still have the same interests, I believe, as I had earlier. I have the same commitment. I think I still have the same analytical skills to look at organisations and devise ways and means of improving them. And as long as people are willing to ask me and invite me in, I'd be delighted to go in. Keeps me active.
Indeed. And you're willing to serve.
I'd recommend it to anybody.
Well, you do sound like an ad for it, I have to say, Jim. You sound fantastic. And people are reminding me, of course, that you are 5 years older than our own current president, Michael D. Higgins, who is 83 right now, I think. Jim, thank you for that, Jim. I've got a few more calls lined up here. I appreciate that. I want to bring in Paddy now from you're over in New Hampshire, Paddy.
Yes, indeed, Katie.
Oh, but that you're Irish from that accent.
I grew up in Dublin, worked in Dublin for years, but we came over here in the 80s, basically for a job.
You watched the debate last night, Paddy.
I did, unfortunately, yeah.
What did you make of it?
A bit of a horror show. Well, I think some of your previous callers or just stole most of my lines. And then Jim was such an inspiration, I was kind of forgetting about the topic. But in American terms, I'd be considered a radical socialist. I'm basically a Bernie bro behind Bernie Sanders. But I always vote Democratic because that's the option here. Mm-hmm. Biden was never my favorite candidate. Some of it being, you know, his actions on Israel and supporting the blitz of Gaza. But I was still going to vote for him, and I probably will still vote for him because that's the choice between him and the absolute horror show that Trump represents.
But you think after last night, you still think he will be the option that you'll be offered? I mean, I know it's very late in the day, but those reports of panic now within the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, I actually think that's good for the Democratic Party because they've stuck with him too long. Back in 2020, the idea was that he'd be the instrument to get Trump out of office. And he'd be a one-term president and, you know, somebody newer, fresher, brighter would come along. But they've sort of stuck themselves to him and gone down the alleyway. I didn't really believe all the reports of Sleepy Joe and how senile he was. But last night was sort of devastating. He looked like he couldn't complete a thought or a sentence half the time. And then it descended into childish insults about golf games and weight. So, you know, far from impressive. I hope it does shake the Democrats. Because they have some fabulous possible candidates there, like Gretchen Whitmer or Gavin Newsom in California. You know, bright, sharp people with experience. But I hope they take the initiative and do that, but I don't think they will.
Yeah, well, and on that then, if it is Joe Biden on the ticket come November,
yeah.
Do you think we're looking at another Trump presidency then?
I fear we are. One of your early callers, who's also in the States, talked about how he could state anything and his followers believe. And the surprising thing is, you know, if you live around here, every second person that you meet randomly is likely already a Trumper. All he needs is the last few percent of the uncommitted to win. So it's a real fear. I think it's a high likelihood if Biden stays as the candidate.
Do you talk politics with people there now? Because I know I've spoken to people over the last number of years who said they just stopped talking about politics because it got so divisive, so polarised.
Yeah, I do because I'm a sort of bolshy socialist anyway. So even with the Democrats, I have huge arguments. But I do have friends who are Republicans, not necessarily Trumpers. We do have, you know, discussions. They're less pleasant than they might have been in the past with some people. And in fact, we've started just put off contact with some people we've known for decades because just couldn't stand the level of insanity that Trump's instilled in.
Really, you literally just cut people off because...
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. People that we would have gone on vacation with decades ago, we just don't want to talk to them. But that's a few of many, you know. So.
It really is.
But he is very corrosive, yeah.
It is incredible how the world has gone. You could never have imagined even 10 years ago the conversations we're now having and not having with people. Paddy, thank you for that. And David is still hanging on for us. David, I wanted to ask you the same thing in terms of where this leaves America now after last night and where it leaves the Democratic, the Democrats. If they, I mean, their choices are keep going, you know, and push through and hope that Trump will stumble or Biden will improve, or jump to a new candidate and then, you know, be like our friend Jim there and, you know, just not have enough time really left to build momentum for their campaign.
Well, first of all, those folks you had on the phone there that were octogenarians all sounded fantastic, much better than poor Mr. Biden did last night.
They did sound fantastic, didn't they? Yeah.
They sounded fantastic. So if Joe Biden was half as compass mentis as those guys were, we'd be in better shape today. But unfortunately, we're not. You asked me about the ageism thing before. I mean, the Democratic Party has a tool in its arsenal to prevent, obviously, from Biden from becoming the candidate. They can not vote for him to be the candidate if it's that much of a concern. So that's an option for them. Then it's a short time to provide another candidate between, you know, the Democratic National Convention and the election, which is in November, which is no time at all. But your caller from New Hampshire there mentioned a couple of candidates that I happen to like. One of them is Gavin Newsom in Newsom in California.
I was looking at a clip actually this morning of him being asked about that at the convention, like saying people are saying you could be the next, and he was grinning from ear to ear. Actually, looked like saying that he was going to be voting for Biden, but definitely looking like he was delighted to be in the frame.
He's smart. He's young. He runs a progressive state. A lot of people would disagree with how he does things. It's a very liberal state, California, and they're not without their issues. But basically, he's a good, intelligent person. I've watched him many times being interviewed and during debates. He's a good, in my opinion, a good candidate. Maybe he's not everybody's cup of tea, but for me, I would endorse somebody like that. But as far as Biden goes, and as far as our options are horrible, you know, we have Joe Biden or that, as I call him, that Lazar. The choices are terrible, terrible choices we have right now. We'll see what happens in September if they decide to let him go for another debate. And I'm sure you know, Katie, too, that the debate yesterday was different than previous times. There was no audience allowed. They were cutting the mics off. The last debate or town hall that Trump had was loaded with Republican supporters. They're whooping and cheering for Trump. It was yesterday's debate was a somber event by comparison.
And of course, the irony as well, David, as we all know as well, is that it was a debate that was called for by the Democrats. It was there. The timing of it was at their choosing, and it may well be one that they really wish never happened.
No, well, the headlines on every newspaper, every radio station, every television station, right, is universally bad for Mr. Biden's performance yesterday.
Yeah.
And mostly out of concern for his health and well-being. You know, it just, I guess, age affects people different ways. Your guest that you had on there sounded remarkable compared to Joe Biden. So he's obviously, his advanced age is affecting him differently than it might others.
Yeah, thanks for that, David. And I know I've got Michael on the line. Michael, you think 60 should be the upper limit?
Good afternoon, Katie. Yes, I do. I watched the whole thing last night and I was appalled. I mean, it's not a joke. This is really serious because you have millions of Americans. You have Irish people over there. Now, people might turn around and say, well, what goes on over there has nothing to do with us. Yes, it does have a lot to do with us.
Oh, it does, for sure.
Yeah, we've been dealing with America. It's apart from England being our next-door neighbour, America is also our neighbour and our friend. But watching that last night, oh, I was just so sad for Biden. I think I'm very concerned for his health. Something tells me he will not make it for the next chat. You can see the way he was stumbling and holding on to the podium. I have no respect for Donald Trump. I think he's the most dangerous. If he gets into the White House, God help America and the rest of the world. Because I can't understand why the vice president... Now, you have a president and then you have a vice president. Now, I watched her giving a speech. Yeah, in fact, you don't really hear of her much now, but she was brilliant. And why can't, whatever you call it, the Democrats or whatever, why can't they not put her in? I'm just baffled.
I think, though, Michael, there was a general view that Kamala Harris underperformed as vice president, and she kind of disappeared over the course of the presidency. So I don't think anybody really was suggesting she was, whatever the question, she wasn't being put forward as the answer.
Well, I think they have a major, major problem on the next one, because I think it's, as I said now, Katie, I think there's a lot more. You had two people on there. They were like 30-year-olds and they're in their 80s. Fantastic. See, everybody's different. If you picture two people coming down the road and you're going up the road and you see them coming down towards you, now, you say to yourself, right, is that man 100% in great health? Has he got a super brain? Or is the other man beside him? Each of us in this universe, are different. We age. Now, we all age. It doesn't matter. We all have to get old. But some of us have what you call, I hate to say, a super brain. They have that little bit extra that even when they're 80 or 90, they still have that physique.
Yeah.
That they have a sort of a little, their brain is a little bit stronger than we say another person okay. who's, yeah. And then, as I said, young people now, I hate to use the word dementia, but, you know, looking at Biden last night, I am very, very concerned for him. I really believe, Katie, he will not be able to take the podium the next time. And I hope I'm wrong.
Okay, Michael, I'm going to have to cut you off there because I've more than one ad break to go on. We're nearly coming up to the hour. Thank you for that, Michael. Appreciate that. Right. And to Paddy and to David and to those our brilliant octogenarians who I think gave us all hope for ourselves. But we'll take our last break there.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Jim was telling us there that he was only the second, he was the oldest man, he thought, running in the local elections, and that there was another woman. And we had a Galwegian in touch to say that that woman was Margarita Darcy, who stood in the local elections in Galway. She was 89 and she was, said our Galwegian, a force to be reckoned with on the hustings. There you go. Maybe it's not about the age, it's about the person. I want to bring in Mary now. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate.
Mary, you had quite the drama.
I sure did.
You flew back. Talk us through it. You flew back from Barcelona. So, well, I'm going to be indelicate and ask you your age as well, Mary. This is the day I'm asking all our guests their ages.
I am 67 years of age.
Okay. And you were flying with your friend who was of a similar age bracket. Yes.
Yes.
And you arrived back from Barcelona late at night.
Yes.
Into Cork Airport, was it?
Yes, into Cork Airport at 12:15 p.m.
Right.
No, a.m. Sorry, a.m.
And your car was there in the car park and off you went.
And off we went and down the airport hill, exiting onto the ring road, and my car conked out.
Just conked in the middle of the road?
In the middle of the road, yes.
So very scary.
It was frightening. If this had happened 4 or 5 o'clock during the day, there would have been a massive accident.
But of course, your difficulty now is that your power is gone in the car completely, is it?
Yes, so we had to push the car over to the side of the road.
Right.
And the car was in complete blackness, darkness, no hazard lights, no lights, nothing.
So very dangerous, really dangerous.
It was. It was frightening. It was also very wet and was lashing. It was frightening. It was, I have to say, because the heavy vehicles were passing by and the car was rocking.
Oh.
Anyway, I rang the AA.
So you had the highest level of AA cover, did you?
I did. Platinum, yes. Platinum gold, yes.
Okay. And so you were saying, okay, thank God we have the cover. You ring the cover
exactly.
And they assured you they'd be on their way, yeah?
Yes, I was told I will have to wait 1 hour, which I didn't mind. So 3/4 of an hour went by, so I decided to ring them to ask them how long more will we be actually waiting for, to be told that the assistant car was broken down and he was waiting for another assistant to come and fix his car.
Oh,
and
God.
Then he would be with me.
So we're now, it's after 2 o'clock in the morning and you're being
yes.
told that the
AA
breakdown assistant is broken down.
Yes. And then I had asked him, where was this guy coming from? And he said he was coming from Kilkenny.
Oh, my God.
To fix his car, and he was in Carrick too.
Okay. So
now I'm sitting. This is now 2:15 in the morning. So I decided to ring the guards. The guards came and assisted me, and they were absolutely outstanding.
Well, I'm sure they were very worried about you as well, because
they were. Yeah. They were, because where the car was, it was a danger to the public.
Absolutely.
Now, I did explain all that to the guy, the AA guy, and to be told there was only one AA breakdown assistant in Cork City that evening.
Right. So the guards got you home anyway, like that was...
They did, yes, they did. They got us home, we got a taxi home, and they waited for their towing crowd to come and pick my car up and bring it to their garage.
And just to say, your AA insurance, it costs you 129, is that right? 129.50
exactly.
A year for this service.
For this service. And that's separate from my car insurance. And the reason why I do that is because in case I ever needed breakdown assistance.
Right.
And this is the first time that I ever needed breakdown assistance. And this is what happened.
Well, we got on to AA. And I can tell you they are very, very apologetic, Mary. They say
after 32 phone calls and 16 to 20 emails.
This is the level of contact you've had. Okay, well, now they're telling us that they'd like to express their sincerest apologies to you for your distressing experience. Because this goes back to last April. You've been trying to sort this out since last April, Mary.
Yes.
They say, unfortunately, on the night in question, our breakdown service vehicle that was deployed via one of our third-party garage networks experienced an unexpected mechanical issue, which led to a delay in reaching you. They say that they offered to cover the cost of a taxi on a pay-and-claim basis.
They did not.
Okay. Well, that's what they're saying in this. But anyway, the good news is, we are committed to making things right for Ms. Donnelly. If she is happy for us to reach out to her directly to discuss any costs she incurred and ensure appropriate reimbursement, please let us know. And they will offer her an upgrade. I'd offer you an upgrade to your current AA membership policy as a gesture of goodwill as well, Mary. So they say they will cover all costs.
And will they contact me or contact you? Because nobody has been on to me yet.
Well, we'll keep on it, Mary. We'll make sure. We won't let this one go, okay?
No.
I know. I can laugh at it now,
but at the time it was daunting. It was frightening.
I can only imagine, Mary. I can only imagine. I have to go to my last ad break, Mary. Mary, we will keep in touch and make sure you get sorted.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, that's all we have time for on Sound Today with James Feeney. Our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. Research was by Clara Eustace, and very best of luck to Clara. She's leaving us today. And today's programme was produced by Owen McLaughlin. Ray will be on after the news, he'll be from outside the Aviva Stadium. But now we go to the news headlines.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Currie. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in-store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.